Hello, and welcome to Endeavors. On today's show, singer-songwriter Fintan on his new album and his recent Toronto residency. That's all coming up on today's show. I first became aware of today's guest earlier this year when I saw him open for the great band Moscow Apartment, who you may remember from the show last year. I actually believe they were on the 100th episode of the podcast. He recently was invited back to Toronto to do his own month-long residency at the Burdock. Coincidentally, the Burdock is run by a former high school classmate of mine from Victoria. So that makes myself, the guy from the Burdock, and my guest today, Fintan, all Victoria, BC boys. Fintan, at just 22, has already amassed over 1 million streams on Spotify in just 3 months, with over 250,000 monthly listeners, and has earned features on such popular playlists as Morning Commute, Chill Vibes, and Indie Pop Chill Out. At the age of 16, he won in the international songwriting competition, and he's also competed at the Yamaha Keys to the Juno songwriting competition and Ireland's RTE1 National Songwriting Competition. He has toured Europe and performed at major Canadian festivals, including Rifflandia, Hometown Festival, Juno Fest, and Rock the Shores. He has a new single out entitled Way Up, and he is working on an album called Better Broken that was initially going to be released in October, but he's delayed it a little bit just because he's trying to figure a few things out. This is my conversation with hometown singer-songwriter Fintan. Fintan, hello.
How you doing?
Good morning, I should say. I mean, it's 12:30, but we like to call it morning for us artists, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
How you doing today, Egan?
Very good. How about you?
Good. I know you you just came from your hotel,
yeah.
And you're your own roadie.
That's right.
As you joked.
All on my own today.
What does that do as an artist? Just that mindset, not having anybody else around you.
What does it do to me as an artist?
Yeah, like I don't know. Does it put you in a different zone or a different mindset versus, you know, if you have, you know, someone, you know, a handler,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or Myers.
Like I say, I'm actually pretty, that's rare for me because I usually have at least my brother Cormac is usually with me wherever I go. I don't fare too well on my own usually. I don't really like to travel much on my own. I don't know. What about you? Do you like to do you do that a lot? Do you like to go around places and stuff, explore on your own?
I mean, I went to the UK last year alone,
right,
for my 30th.
Yeah, there you go.
So that was a thing. But, especially, if you don't know what you're doing or you're in a new city, it can be daunting.
Yeah, it makes
right?
me anxious, I think. I don't know. I usually just, hole away in the hotel room. So I gotta usually have I don't know. This is, painting myself in a bad light, maybe. I'm not very independent, but no, it's all good, especially if I'm meeting friendly people like yourself, that I'm totally fine on my own. Must be good for writing, though, hey?
Yeah.
I guess that's probably a good point. Being alone is probably good to get in that mindset.
Although I can never, I don't know about you, but I can never write at home. Like, I tend to go somewhere else to write.
Right.
Just because I think being at home means a specific thing to me. I don't know how you find that as an artist and as a writer.
Well, because when I'm writing, I'm having to sing as well. You know, I'm like, I have to be loud. So it'd be rare for me to find a place where I could go. Unless I owned like a studio off, like that was not in my house. So I think, vast majority of my writing is done at home for that reason, probably like that practical reason. But when you're writing, I'm guessing it's actually written, you know, words. So I can't go to like the coffee shop and pull on my guitar, you know?
Yeah.
I think I'd get kicked out pretty fast.
But I know that you play and you go around a lot with your brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's that like? Not only having a fellow musician with you, but you two are related. How does that work for you?
It's a lot of fun. There's like a lot of trust there, so it's like I don't even really think about it. If it was anyone else, I'd probably consider that dynamic a lot more. Like, oh, who's this person? What's their vibe like? How does it affect me? But when it's your brother, I think it's just like so natural. It's kind of like, I don't know. Yeah, we're not even a year apart. We're 11 months difference in age, so we're really close, and we have been, as you can imagine, my whole childhood. So. I think it just feels totally, I think it feels, you know, it's nice to show up to places, it's nice to show up to gigs, it's nice to show up to any kind of media thing, anything like that. It's nice to show up with your own, you know, trusted people, because I think it enables you to be able to set the tone to whatever you want that to be. And you could do that alone for sure, but I think it takes a little more like assertiveness. When you're with like it's me and Cormac, we show up with and we've got our own, you know, vibe going, and that make especially if I'm showing up somewhere to perform, it's like more comfortable, I think, to be able to have that that like rock there to ground me in whatever that is, you know. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. And I know you also just finished a residency up at the Burdock, so you've actually been in town for the last month or so.
Yeah.
Given that, was it good for you that you had somebody else here for that support rather than just being completely on your own?
Yeah, totally. In fact, the story's bigger than that, because my drummer, who's one of my closest friends, his name's Marcus, he's a great guy, and he just moved to Toronto, so I had him here for the residency. And also, my best friend, Josh, he came out for the month as well. So I had like my guys here. I had my brother, my best friend, and Marcus, the drummer, who actually lives here now. So it was really nice to have that crew. I can't even imagine without it. I mean, there's a reason people tour with like their close circle, because when you're just in places that make you, you know, if you're like somewhere you don't know, it's totally new. Every day you're meeting like tons of people you don't know, and it can be a little bit. I'm a very social, outgoing person. It's not like an issue for me, but it definitely makes you vulnerable. So having your tightest people, it's really important. It makes it a real joy.
You mentioned touring, and I know you did a few shows out west before you came here. You were in Victoria and Vancouver.
Yeah.
But then you were here for a month. And just for you as an artist, how do you compare, you know, touring from place to place, being in a city, you know, every day or every other day, let's say, versus being static for a month?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, it kind of just like gives you more chance to understand, like get to know a city. But like I said earlier, I don't really do that very well. Like, I don't really like do the whole like backpacking, exploring thing. I mean, I should do it someday, because I think it's probably a very healthy thing to do. I have this thing where, not to get into like a therapy session here, but I struggle with not working or like not doing something that I feel is like gonna help my career. So if I'm in a place for a month, if I don't have something to do that day, if I'm not like going to a gig, or if I'm not going to a meeting of some kind or a session anywhere, then I can feel I can be hard on myself. Like, I have like a guilt about that. So when you're bouncing from city to city, it kind of feels really good, because it feels like constantly I have a purpose. Like, so every day that I'm in that city is like I'm working. And so it makes me feel a little more like, I don't know, like I got my shit together. Like, I'm like a little more, you know. Like, the guilt gets to be gone. So I think I might prefer bouncing around. But, you know, I'm considering even moving to Toronto. So it's really, it was important to be here for a month. That's part of the reason we're here, is because it makes a lot of sense as a musician, especially the kind of music that I play, to be here. But I wasn't going to just move without having spent like a lot of time here. Like, I'd only been here once before, so it was important to be here.
How do you find the scene in Toronto and in the East versus the West Coast of Canada? Because they both have very great music scenes, but
yeah,
they're very different, I find.
Yeah, yeah. I think mostly it's a size thing, I think. Everything that's different about... Because I'm not even from Vancouver, I'm from Victoria, so it's really small. There's so much talent there. I think there might even be like more talent per capita there than like anywhere I've ever been. Victoria's full of great music, but with the size of it, it's just this little island. And there's something like an island is really just isolating, just in general. And Toronto is this place where as soon as your feet touch the ground here, it just feels like you're connected to something bigger than you've been a part of before. It's the biggest city I've ever spent time in, for sure. So I think that the main difference is like, there's so much more to do here. Like I could just look up any shows going on here tonight, and I could, you know, we could go see a show right now after this. We could probably go see like 10 shows tonight if we wanted to. And that's just like, that just enables for, it creates such a lively environment creatively, you know, being around so much creativity makes us more creative, you know? So I think that's the biggest difference. Also, the main difference is that the Canadian music industry really like exists here in Toronto. You know, there's not so much of that out where I'm from.
Yeah.
And even Vancouver, which is a big, like, a more comparable city in terms of its, like, you know, size than Victoria to Toronto is, there's not the same level of industry existing in Vancouver. So you still get the sense that Toronto is, like, the hub of it all, like the place where this stuff's actually decisions are being made out here, you know?
I feel like, having come from the West Coast myself,
yeah,
I feel like Vancouver wants to be LA.
Mm, yeah, maybe.
And
yeah,
it's like, you know, coming from film, it's very much Americanized in a lot of ways.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, like there's still a lot of talent. I'm like, I know a lot of great bands in Vancouver.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's, I think it's definitely got, and plus because it's so close to the States too, there is that American influence.
Yeah, right.
I find.
Do you think that Toronto is maybe a little more like Canadian? Like it feels like it's more pride there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we aren't that far from New York, so there still is that, but Toronto's been around a lot longer too. It's a much more developed city. Vancouver is still very, very new.
Totally.
Just look at the architecture.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Name me a building in Vancouver that's like over 100. You can't really.
I know, it's unbelievable.
Right?
Like, I know. And even Toronto, like Toronto, like definitely has that. You get that sense of the history here, but even just our country in general,
yeah,
it's unbelievably young.
Yeah,
it's amazing to think about. Like I, yeah. Every time I go to Europe, every time I go to Germany, it's just unbelievable. It's such an incredible feeling to be in a building that's been around for like 800 years. Just like Jesus, it's such a, and I think that actually gives places those kinds of countries in Europe where there's such a rich history of arts and culture. You're really aware of it there, and I think it makes people more. I think people are more like interested in like going to see live music or artistic events over in those places because I think there's just like such a huge history of it, and we're just, yeah. I think people do get the sense maybe Canada's kind of catching up a little bit, but the thing that we all know is that Toronto, especially in the last decade, is like really. It's like there's a pride there now. Like there's such a pride from being from Toronto. And I'm not from Toronto, but I really can see that. And that's really cool because that's like the first step in not being just like little America, you know? It's like, no, it's Canada.
You mentioned Europe, and I know when you were younger, you did a lot of festivals in England, Ireland, Germany with your family.
Yeah, we did some playing there, yeah. So that was where I'm actually born. I'm actually born in Birmingham, England.
Okay.
My whole family is from there. And I moved to Victoria when I was about 6 or 7. Yeah, but we've done a couple tours going back with the family, whether it's like me and my siblings or if it was like me and my dad. I've played some shows, yeah, in Europe, totally.
Zinaista, being exposed to that at such a young age like you were, how do you think that has impacted you as an artist?
Because a lot of, like, a really, as you can imagine, a really common question that I'll get is, like, or any musician gets, is, like, when did you start playing music, or, like, when did you start writing songs? And it's honestly a difficult question for me to answer because it's, like, constantly was around. I tend to say that I have more of a clear memory of when I realized that other families weren't just all as musical as mine was. I just assumed that that was the case. Like, I assumed everyone's dad was going out playing gigs every night. Like, it was just like that. I as a kid would assume that. So I remember being like, oh my God, okay, that's kind of cool. That's kind of special about my family. That's pretty cool. But I don't remember ever like finding having a first interest in music. Just constantly was around me. I have this really cute photo of, it's either me or my sister. I'm not sure. We look pretty similar as babies, but. Oh, it's one of us sitting in my dad's guitar case, looking up at him while he's like singing a song. So it's just like totally like represents my childhood to me. Is that like super, super musical, and I think that how could it not have impacted me? It's like just so. I thought about this recently too. When people decide they want to be musicians and make, you know, be singer songwriters too. The most common story is that like parents would hate that, and like there's a lot of, you get a lot of pressure from your family to not do that. And I was saying with this the other day, that's a hardship that I've just never even had to think about, which is such a privilege, honestly, to never have had to worry about what my parents would have thought, or like to have had no pressure from them to do anything else, because obviously they'd be hypocritical if they said otherwise, but. I think that's made me really fearless in my ambitions, you know? Mm.
You have a new EP out, mm-hmm. Better Broken.
Better Broken is a single, actually. The EP is Then We Fall. Better Broken just came out, is the most recent song, and it's going to be the title of my upcoming EP. But it's not quite out yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm like, sorry.
All good, man.
Misread the press release there.
Yeah. Well, it's probably confusing because we were going to have it out by now already, and I didn't announce it or anything, but you would have maybe heard that because you're on the inside. But I was gonna have this EP out, but I put out a song called Way Up, and it's been doing really well, and people really like it, and it's made me realize that it's been a real step up for me in my record making history. I can really see it as like an improvement for me. So I decided that the next thing I put out, the next piece of music, the next group of music, that has to be at least on its level, but hopefully better. And so I just thought, like, because it's doing well, it buys us some time because it's still got some legs and people are still discovering it and enjoying it. So it's no, I don't feel like I'm in immense pressure to have this EP out like right now. It just makes me want to, you know, keep getting better, obviously.
I mean, you did just get 1 million streams on Spotify in 3 months.
Yeah, that's true.
And you have 250,000, I think, monthly listeners. Yeah. How does that feel?
That's really cool. Yeah, it's really, really cool. I think we just crossed 300,000 monthly listeners, which is crazy. And I think we're actually at, not that the number is super mad. It's a crazy thing to think about. I think it's something like, it's over 3 million streams now for all the music together on Spotify. And yeah, it's just like, I've spent a long time doing everything I could to make sure that as many people as possible heard my music. And the early work for that is, a lot of it is like conceptual and trying to get your team together and making the music that you hope people will enjoy in a wide spread way. So to have it actually be happening, it just feels like a lot of work coming together. It feels really right. It feels like, okay, great, because this is what I've spent a long time working towards. I mean, I've played a ton of shows. So I obviously, like, you don't have to wait to, you don't have to wait to be on a streaming service to get lots of people listening. Of course, you can go out on the street like the way I did and play to anybody walking by. But it's nice that I could make these records and feel confident in them and finally have something that I can really stand behind and release it. And then it pays off because people are finding it. That's a great feeling, yeah.
I think, you know, for a lot of people not in the industry, they don't necessarily understand Spotify as they would something like iTunes. Being in the business, and I think Spotify is where we're headed because, you know, iTunes iTunes got shut down divested, I think is the term that Apple used. But, you know, because you are, you know, quite popular on Spotify, what has it taught you about that platform and as the industry as a whole?
Yeah, I think that, well, it's funny. Most people are, don't like these things. Most people, I mean, and you can see, I can see why you don't get the same kind of money. If someone's listening, someone could listen to your album a million times, like, just themselves on Spotify, and you're still probably just going to make as much money as if one person just bought it on a CD. So I understand that from a financial point of view, it's not, people obviously are a little bit upset with these streaming services, but honestly, I've never, and maybe this is because of my age, maybe it's because I'm young and I didn't have a whole career without it and then come in and like change the whole game up. So maybe that's why, but I've always thought it was just an incredible tool for me to be able to reach people that I would never, ever be able to reach. I could, with this little app on my phone, it's Spotify for Artists, and I can look at where people are listening around the world, and it's incredible. It's just amazing. You know, I'd have to have such a established career in any point in the past to be able to be heard in, you know, the Philippines at this young point in my career, to be listened in the Philippines or to be listened to in I don't know, Nigeria. Someone messaged me the other day from Nigeria saying that it was like that one of my songs was his girlfriend's favorite song, and he's just like, I just wanted to let you know that like it's our song, we listen to it together. It's like, it's incredible from Nigeria. Yeah. Like, I mean obviously there's no difference, music listeners exist everywhere, but you gotta understand, as a songwriter, to have your songs impact people so far away, it's incredible. And there's no way that's possible without Spotify or Apple Music. It's for sure where we're all headed. If I even hear about an artist, like, oh, you gotta check this person out, they're really great, that's the first move I make. I go to Spotify. I just gotta see, or Apple Music, either one.
Yeah.
And I see what's up. I think it's invaluable. And it is tough to make a living off of it. You'd have to be very, very popular on it. But my biggest goal has always been to tour and play live. And that's because of these streaming services and less money's being made off of records, more people are touring. And that's really where money's being made. And I'm totally, that's fine. That's fine by me. Like, that's my dream anyway. So I think I'm living in the perfect age for what I want to do.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, how you can get a global listenership through these services. But then you also sort of were joking about how you're not great traveling on your own, so to speak. So how do you balance those two things?
Well, I love to travel. I just love to feel like I'm working.
Right.
Like,
okay.
Like I find it very difficult to have a vacation or something, or like to just not do anything. So if I'm in a city and I'm visiting and I've got nothing going on, I find that really hard to just go out and be like, oh, I'm just gonna explore. But if I'm in a city because I'm playing a show that night, it's a great feeling for me. And then it means when I have those down time, that those hours, then I can really, that, like, I don't know if this is relatable to you, but I feel like I spend my life trying to earn my downtime. Like,
all right, yeah.
Like, what better thing is there to do than just like be on Netflix in bed and like eating a burrito or something and like watching Netflix? That's like where we're all really trying to be. But if I do that without having like done something that I feel is of value first, I feel like I hate myself.
Fair, yeah.
So I'm like, every time I'm out doing something or like I'm playing a show or something, it's like in my head, I'm like, okay, now I can go home. Now I've earned it. I can go home and just watch Netflix. So I kind of live my life like that. And I need to earn any downtime. If I'm like, if I just right now went and like went to Mexico for a week, I would not feel like I earned that.
Okay.
And I would probably not be able to relax. That probably sounds psychotic, but
I get it. You mentioned your single, Way Up.
Yeah.
Where did that song come from for you?
A relationship that just would not die. Just would not go anywhere. It's the EP, Then We Fall, my first EP. That's all about the same relationship. And I mean, it was a relationship that, so I've written tons of songs about it because it's been a very like tumultuous, that's the right word, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I say a big word like that's a risk for me. It's been a very, hectic thing to get over, and which means, good songs, but hopefully. Way Up is about the feeling like you're finally out of it. It's like that first, it's initial, and it's never truly, it's a dangerous feeling to trust, because as I will tell you, I've felt it before and then gone back, and then, yeah. But that's the cycle, unfortunately. But with Way Up, it was, it's kind of like a feeling to me of like release, especially towards the end of the song. The lyric is, I can't see you up this high. So it's saying like I'm way up now, I'm past it, and I can't even see you anymore. So honestly, it's like it's a weird thing for me. It's like feels like the sassiest song I've ever written, because it's kind of like, it's me putting my foot down kind of thing. It's come from a place of when you just you just can be just exhausted by that. Situation when a relationship will not go away, and you're constantly in pain because of this situation, but you still can't leave it. It is such a relief to be out of it. It really is like you feel like you get like a second chance or something. So that's kind of the feeling that it's about.
Why do you think breakups and relationships and heartbreak make for such good material?
Well, I think because they're so universal. So that's, I think, the main thing. It's, like, the most accessible thing you could write about, which means it's the most, like, important thing to hear, because we're all going through it at some point. And also, like, artists tend to write or do or, work with things that are the most important to them or the most, like, visceral to them. Like, in our personal lives, there's nothing... that there's really kind of nothing more important than our relationships, like our intimate relationships. They're the most, it's where you make yourself the most vulnerable, and wherever you make yourself the most vulnerable is where you can be hurt the most. And so they're, just that's by the nature of it. I think it's very painful. And when something's painful, we as artists, our way of dealing with that is, how do we put that into words? I find it very helpful to write songs about these things, because in order to write anything, I think, well, you have to look at things, like, you have to look at, like, the same specific thing from, like, every possible angle you can, and then I think it helps you get some perspective because of that. But we all love listening to these songs because they help explain our own lives to us when it's hard to... It's like you're able to give your friend better advice than you can give yourself. Just because I write these breakup songs doesn't mean I can deal with a breakup really well.
Right.
I still turn to songs when I'm in need, when I'm feeling upset about anything. So it's important to make. I think it's always going to be important to make, especially as our culture and our society evolves and changes. So will the way that we deal or talk about these things. So it's going to be constantly relevant.
You say that you, in your music, you want to be as deeply honest as possible. And I know for a lot of people, whether they're artists or not, honesty is not always the easiest mm-hmm. thing yeah. to portray or to talk about in that way. Totally. How do you prepare yourself for just getting in that mindset and being, getting ready to talk about these emotions or these feelings? Or
it's honestly easy because these songs start in my bedroom usually, So there's no one to be it's harder then to take the next step and start to perform in front of people. But I think in order for me to want to do this. There's something in me that feel has, I have, I generally have this feeling of wanting to share my own thoughts or feelings with people. Like, that's why I love performing. But then also, I think it's really, I mean, you said, what you said is really true. We find it difficult to do this, but that's why it's important that artists do it. It's like kind of like what our job is. And I was talking to someone about this week, and they put it to me so well about performing in general, is that we go to shows to see somebody express themselves so like violently, like so at such a high level, expressing themselves so honestly and so powerfully, and we're watching it in the audience, living through it, because it's hard for us to express ourselves as well as a great performer can. So we're there to almost like be shown how it's done. And that's why we feel like empowered when we watch Beyonce, because she's so powerful and so empowered. She does what she does that and expresses that better than anybody in the world. And it's why we go to those shows and feel so great and feel like that, because Beyonce is guiding us through. And it's like anything. And so being really honest and watching a singer-songwriter bleed their heart out on stage, it's showing us, it's teaching us how to be honest with our own and tapping into that emotion within ourselves. And that's really important, that we need to all do it. And that's why I think it's a good mission statement to approach music that way. It's like, and if it's uncomfortable sometimes, then it's like important to remind myself, good, that's why it's important.
You mentioned that you know, a lot of these songs started in your bedroom, but in terms of your actual writing process, do you find that you are a lyric first musician or a melody first?
Usually melody. I think sometimes there's certain times where it switches around, but most commonly, start with a melody, and then it's kind of like, well, what does this melody feel like to me? Or it's like once I've got this melody, what's really on my mind? What am I trying to say? And then I'll go into it. But I find the lyrics are the thing I care about the most, and I spend a lot of time on them. But I want to always make sure that, a melody is just, you know, it's almost just as important to me too. So, but it's usually really quick. So knowing it's a good melody to me is that it comes really quickly. If you're like having to sit down and really figure out where's this melody going, I find like if it's going to be that difficult, then it's probably not very good. And the only reason I say that is because the melodies we love the most are like you can hear them once and sing them back, and it's because they just make sense to our brains. They're just like they go where they feel they should go. So it's actually quite, to me at least, I find it quite quick to write a good melody. Not that it's still few and far between. So you still are writing, like you probably got to write like 10 bad songs to get a good one. So it's not like I'm just constantly whipping out great melodies, but it's really obvious to me when there is one. And so it's usually that's pretty quick. And then I'll even like fully have the framework of a song before I even write lyrics. So like I'll find like I'll have like my verse melody, my pre-chorus melody, my chorus melody, my bridge melody. I often can shape the whole thing out before even knowing what I'm gonna say. Yeah.
But then, you know, once you do add lyrics to that, how much do you find that your melody changes, or you have to tweak it a little, or how much do you find that your lyrics changes once you actually put the two together?
I don't change that much because I enjoy a really strict framework to work within. Like, it makes it easier to me to write lyrics when I put myself in like a structural box. I find like if you asked me to write a poem and it was like a free flow structure, I'd find that very difficult to do. But if you give me a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- question is what do I want to say, and then it's like how do I say it within the structure that I've created for myself. You know, that to me is the joy of it and the challenge of it.
You've already won a few songwriting competitions. I know you won the international songwriting competition when you were 16. the Keys to the Junos,
yeah,
and the RTE One Nationwide Songwriting Competition.
That's right, yeah.
And you're only 22. Winning something like that, the International Songwriting Competition, when you were 16, what was that like for you? Did you comprehend all of what was happening?
Yeah, but it was like one of like the subset. It wasn't like the overall winner category, which would have been probably a way bigger deal. But I don't know. It's like the most important thing to me. It's like if I was gonna get praise on anything, I'd hope it was my song. So it just means a lot. It's like very validating. I've wanted to do this. Like, it's the only thing I've ever wanted. And you know, the truth is though, competitions are cool because they are validating. They're usually being decided by people that you respect and can admire. But there's still nothing as rewarding as like just like anybody telling you that your song impacted them. That's still the ultimate feeling. And these contests are just really cool. They're cool confidence boosters, and they're nice things to like write on your resume.
We mentioned that you know, as a kid, you performed in Europe and you performed at many festivals. Rifflandia, hometown festival.
Hell yeah. That's the best one.
Festivals themselves are a great, you know, networking opportunity for a lot of musicians. But for you, was there a certain, I guess, added bonus of playing at this big festival in your hometown?
Yeah, it's like, because it means a lot to everyone I know. So it's like a big deal because you say you're playing like the main stage of Rifflandia and everyone's like, oh, people can get that. People can understand why that's a big deal where I'm from. And yeah, it's like really, it is a great place to meet people. And it you could just imagine, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be able to play a big moment like that in front of like lots of your friends and then go out to your favorite bar afterwards or restaurant or whatever. Because you're comfortable in your hometown. Yeah, I love those festivals, man. Festivals are, especially at this point where I'm just starting out, really, they're such a great way to just play in front of all sorts of new music fans. Because everyone that goes to a festival, they're music fans. So they're the kind of people you want to play to, because music fans, like real hardcore music fans, are the kind of people that get on board early. And that's the coolest thing ever. So it's really a lot of fun. I don't know so much about, I'm not the greatest networker like in an industry sense. I'm not like the best at that. But I really enjoy meeting like new people, and festivals are such a great way to do that.
And I feel like festivals are really attuned to the singer-songwriter. I mean, yes, there are festivals out there that are, you know, much more for band oriented. But I think that there's something about being a singer-songwriter and a festival that seems to go hand in hand.
True. Yeah.
What has your experience with that been like?
Well, I've kind of had experience with a little bit of both now, because I do come from this singer's really folky singer-songwriter thing, and I've played festivals as that. And then the music I'm making is now it's like way more boldly pop. Like it's not so much acoustic guitars anymore. It's like there's more synths involved and like, you know, programmed drums and things, which I love. But you're probably right that I think historically, like it's a singer-songwriter's, like, you know, arena. Like people love going to see and really listen to the songs. You know, it's like a turntable of like different artists, and you get different artists' voices and different artists' perspectives. And so it's really, so yeah, does that adhere to that? But nowadays festivals are such a huge business. There's all kinds. You got amazing EDM festivals where people are just like, what a release that is for people. I've never actually personally attended one, but they look pretty fun. and you get like these Coachella events now, which nowadays are just like huge pop, you know, pop stadium acts will play these festivals now. So it actually is kind of, wouldn't you think, it's kind of like really wide open nowadays, you know?
We mentioned Rifflandia in Victoria. You know, we got to rep the hometown.
Oh, yeah.
Your favorite live music venue in Victoria?
Victoria.
And you recently played at the Capitol.
Yeah, Capitol's nice. I think it's maybe the McPherson.
Okay. Yeah.
Playhouse.
Yeah.
And I've never played it. I've been in musicals from my high school that performed there.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
But I'd love to play that. I'd love to sell it out. The Belfry's nice. I like those theater venues.
Yeah.
I think those are the nicest that Victoria has to offer. The Royal and the McPherson, probably.
The other two, yeah.
I mean, that would be nice. That'd be nice.
Yeah. No, the McPherson has really nice acoustics.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I think the other one I would enjoy would be, it's not a theater per se, but Alex Goulden.
Oh, yeah, and I have played there a few times. Alex Goulden's a lot of fun. Yeah, really nice. That's a good venue. That's definitely one of the best ones. They do a lot of shows are there.
Yeah.
I mean, Rifflandia takes place in there, too.
Yeah.
That's one of the venues. Yeah, that's a great one.
That, and I think when I was at Rifflandia, they also did stuff at the Metro as well.
Yeah, another great...
Is that still kicking?
I think I've performed in every venue now, maybe.
Oh, yeah?
For most.
Okay.
Definitely not every. I mean, we can't count the McPherson until I'm not in a musical playing it.
Right.
Yeah, the Metro. My dad actually had a CD release concert at the Metro. That was my first time being in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, years ago when I was a kid. He got me up to do a song, I think. Played one of my songs, probably like 11 or 12 or something.
I think they're, you know, knowing a lot of the artists that come from Victoria, I definitely feel like, and you know, it goes back to what you said earlier about there might be more talent there per capita than there is here.
Seems like it, right?
But I feel like there's also a certain type of artist that comes from Victoria. Is it, do you find that? Like, maybe they're a little more towards, you know, folk, a little bit of the, you know, the quote-unquote hippie music.
Sure, yeah.
Just because of Victoria's history.
And also, it's just like, it's a real... people, I guess, are making music that fits, that's like the good soundtrack to that kind of lifestyle. We're living like a little, we're on a little paradise island, you know? Going to Hornby in the summertime, going to Salt Bay, it's like, you want to listen to Kurt Swell. You want to listen to John and Roy and those artists. But it was kind of, as much as I love being from there and having a lot of influence in that type of music, it's been important for me to kind of feel like I could be more than just a Victoria artist. Like I my real goals are, my true main goal is to be seen as a global artist. I really want to play all over. And I want to make music that can travel all over. So, but sorry, that's not your question. But yes, there is definitely a defined Victoria thing. You know what? In recent years, there's a huge amount of like R&B and like and soul music coming from Victoria. And it's because and it's just brilliant. It's brilliant. There's tons of really really great bands. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder why that is. I think, you know, it's probably just you're enclosed. So it's like its own little thing. It's not so much influenced by the outside world, which is really, really cool. And that really creates interesting art.
Yeah.
Interesting art often comes from, like, these places that are, like, off the beaten track, or people that are from weird little weird little towns with, like, bizarre upbringings. Like, so much of our favorite artists, they're usually have an interesting backstory. And there's a reason for that. Because then they have a perspective that they can tell us that we're like, oh, wow, really cool, you know?
You just finished this residency, and you did a tour out west before that. You mentioned you want to be a global artist. If you could pick one city in the world to play, where would it be?
One city in the world. I think, Brendan, yeah, I was talking to my friends about this recently. I want to go to Japan so badly, so I'd say Tokyo.
Okay.
It's just so I could see it.
Yeah.
And also, although, you know what? I see these videos of some of my favorite bands and artists playing in the Philippines, and they seem like they're the greatest fans in the world. Like, so positive, so much love. I would love to play in the Philippines. Well, I don't know exactly where city-wise. I don't even honestly know. What are some cities in the Philippines? I don't know.
Manila?
Manila is the biggest, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's say Manila then. I'd love to play in Manila.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I think for us in Canada, you know, especially in the West, there is a large Asian influence, you know, like in Victoria, Vancouver, there's a large Japanese population.
Yeah.
But the Philippines, more so than any other country I find, and I've learned this talking with different artists,
mm-hmm.
like I talked to Dave Moffat last year from the Moffats, and their reunion album was giant in the Philippines,
wow.
like bigger than in Canada. They're superstars over there. So there is definitely an appetite for Western music over there, and a lot of Canadian music too. And I don't know why that is. It's interesting.
It is really interesting, and I think it's really I love people that love and support things just in general. Like
yeah.
people that can be fans. I think this is the greatest. It's so pure. It's so beautiful to me. Like just to really support an artist because you love what they make. And I think it seems to me that, those places, I don't even know why I fully think this, but I just, every time, especially the Philippines, it seems like they just support their favorite artist so viciously. It's so cool. I would love to feel like, it must just be the greatest thing in the world. I mean, it's probably very egotistical. Like, I want to be adored, but I think it's a really beautiful exchange. I think they really, truly seem to just love the music, and it obviously means so much to them. It must be the greatest thing in the world to play in front of that kind of crowd.
What is the first thing you're going to do when you get back home?
Oh, great question. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to Tocafina. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm gonna go there.
All right.
You ever
yeah.
been there?
It's been years since...
Such a great restaurant.
I'm trying to remember. It's been 10 years since
wow.
I lived in Victoria.
Wow.
So...
Whereabouts did you live?
Oak Bay.
In Oak Bay?
Yeah, I went to Oak Bay High.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
What year did you graduate?
06.
I wonder if you were ever there with my sister.
Did...
No, probably not. She's 25. She would have just missed each other when you were graduating.
Yeah, because it, like the year that I graduated, 06,
yeah.
the class that, like the grade eights,
yeah.
would have been the class of 2010.
Yeah. I think she might have graduated in 2011, maybe. And I don't know. I can't quite think.
Okay.
But that,
yeah,
you
that
would
makes
just
sense.
Miss each other. You would have just missed each other.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay, cool. I don't know. I don't know if Tocafina's probably not been around for 10 years.
No, I mean, like, I've definitely heard of it because,
yeah.
like, I've been back
yeah,
since.
Really
I just,
good.
I just don't think I've been. See, I would always like to go for like sushi.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or like my favorite brunch spot is.
That's what I'm gonna do. You can pick up a. Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off. But I'm pick up a burrito from Tocafina, and I'm gonna go to the ocean somewhere and just like watch the ocean. But where's your favorite? What were you saying? Your favorite?
Well, there's a couple of great sushi places. There's
yeah.
a couple like right in Chinatown, right on the edge of there that
oh,
are really
yeah.
good.
Yeah. What's someone called that is like on the.
Yeah, it's like the bridge.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean when I say
yeah,
the bridge
yeah, yeah, yeah.
is right here.
Yeah.
And then there's a sushi place that's like right here.
Yes.
But I forget the name of it.
I went there for the first time like a couple months ago.
It's really good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
There's tons of great sushi. There's so many great restaurants. In Victoria, walking around downtown Victoria, even though it's such a tiny downtown, if you can turn in any direction, there'll be like a coffee shop and a sushi place.
Yeah.
Right there.
I also really like, and I don't go there a lot, and it's generally a family thing, but the Blue Fox.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Best brunch
ever.
Ever.
You got to get there at the right time, though, because the lineup is crazy.
Yeah, be prepared to line up.
Oh, you got to line up. Yeah, that's wild. I can't tell you the amount of times I've pulled up there and been like, and just have to go somewhere else because it's so busy there.
Yeah.
But it's busy for a reason.
Yeah.
As you
it's
know.
Got, I mean, I haven't been there in years, but I know it's like, and it's been around forever.
Yeah.
But it's even like picked up business within the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, I bet. It's really established
yeah.
as like a
yeah.
iconic Victoria place. I think it burnt down like fairly recently and they had to
oh, really?
Close for a while and they had to redo it, I think, yeah.
The one place that I miss though that I'm sad closed down, Floyd's.
Floyd's, yeah. There's another.
Well, the James Bay location.
Yeah, so they got that still.
But the iconic Cadbury location.
I know.
But.
So lame. I mean, I heard that it's because they're making. The owner of the lot or whatever is the building is going to turn it into apartments.
Probably.
So
well,
they
probably increased rent, and the owner was just like,
that's what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But
have you ever done the Mahoney?
I did the Mahoney once. Yeah.
Did you win it?
Honestly, I can't even remember.
Oh, that's probably a no. I think you'd remember
yeah.
winning it. I think.
Does the James Bailey patient have the Mahoney as well?
I think it must. If they don't.
That's like their signature, right? The signature. For those not in Victoria and uninitiated, Floyd's is this great, like, dive diner in Victoria.
Yeah.
But they have this thing called the Mahoney where it's the kitchen just makes whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
And then you flip a coin. And if you
double or nothing, right?
Yeah, and if you call it correctly, it's free. If you call it incorrectly, it's double.
Yeah. Or you can just pay like $18 for it or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you flip and you guess wrong, you're paying a lot of money for
yeah.
much. You know, the nice thing about it is they give you so much food that even if you pay double, you kind of have two meals.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about it.
It is worth it. But it's like, you can get really weird combinations sometimes
it's bizarre.
with them home.
Yeah.
I've been around with a few people who have done it, but I don't always go there for brunch. So it's like, you know, I don't always get there in time for the Mahone, but
yeah. Is that how it's called? Did I say it wrong? Is it Mahone?
Is it the Mahone or the Mahoney?
I have no idea.
It's one of the two. Yeah. Anyway, go to Floyd's and
Floyd's.
Figure out what it is. Us Victoria boys should know.
Yeah, we should know. That's tragic.
But,
maybe I'll go to Floyd's. I've never been to that other location.
No, but it's right on the harbor, isn't it?
It'd be close, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like
near I would say, I think it's
totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like right around the corner there. It's nice to think about Victoria. It's been
but
a while.
For me, the most iconic, and this is because I'm from Oak Bay, so I'm a little bit biased here. The most iconic restaurant for me as a kid was the Galley.
The Galley, yeah.
Fish and chips.
Right.
They had this great British chip shop, and you can go and you get fish and chips wrapped in like a newspaper picnic basket, and you take it down to the beach.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that is a great place. And I only went there fairly recently. I didn't even know about it for the longest time. But we can tie it back into the music. The girl that showed me the Galley that I've only ever been there with her was the girl that these songs are all about.
Yes!
So we did it. We made it back.
We Seinfeld'd the interview.
Yeah. But it's hard for me to enjoy fish and chips anywhere because I'm from England, man. It's like,
yeah,
it's hard. And the Galley's great. It is great. But I miss real English chips.
Yeah, fair.
They just don't do them the same out here. It's like fish and french fries. I want chips.
Yeah. I suppose, technically speaking, chips are basically just a thicker wedge. Like,
I think
so. That's how you would describe, like,
how I would
describe a chip as opposed to a fry, right? That they're slightly thicker.
Well, in England, you wouldn't eat fries. That's not even a term that would exist.
Yeah, it's chips, yeah.
But chips are just, they're like, you go to the chippy, whatever it's called, the chipper, and you get just a bag at your after the club.
They're not quite potato wedges, but
they're just thick. They're
They're like
thick ass fries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
and they're just so good.
Yeah,
and they're probably so bad for you, but so delicious. And I it's honestly, if anyone listening wants to reach out and tell me in any city in this country the best fish and chip places, it's important for me to know because I need to like it's. It's important for it to be very like English style to me. It's important.
The
Galley's the best in Victoria.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah.
When I was doing the UK, actually, before I went to the UK, I was in Ireland, and so I had my first fish and chips there.
And that's easily as good to me.
Yeah. And then I did have one in England, but I was only in London, so.
Did you prefer the English one, or did you?
Actually, the one that I had in Howth, which was like this just little town off Dublin,
yeah,
really, really good.
Nice.
And like, I think it's a chain, so I think they might have some in England too.
Yeah.
So
I spent some time living in Dublin, and or just outside of it, and that's some nice memories going out with friends, and like you always end up in the chip shop
at
the end of the night. It's like it's like becomes like the after party. Like everybody goes from the bar or the club. Everybody goes straight into the chip shop, and you just like you keep the party alive. It's a real like cool little culture there.
When I was in Scotland, one thing I learned about was effectively what's called Scottish poutine.
Wow.
Because it's like, it's not poutine, like it's here rather than gravy. It's like, you can get fries with like curry sauce.
Wow, okay.
And then if you want cheese, but it's not cheese curds, it's just like shredded.
Right.
That
sounds good.
But, because, I mean, curry is everything over there, right?
Dude, we're going to have to start talking about food, because I am getting now,
I am getting
hungry here.
We derailed this interview a little bit, talking about our favorite places to eat in our hometown, you know, but I suppose...
That's fine by me.
I suppose when
getting hungry.
I suppose when you have two Victoria boys, you know,
do you ever, you said it's been 10 years since you've lived there, but have you gone back more recently than that.
Yeah, like because before I moved here, I was in Vancouver for 9 years.
Right.
So when I was in Vancouver, I would go back a lot.
Of course. Yeah.
Since I've been here twice a year, maybe.
Okay.
Nice. Usually once at Christmas,
oh,
and
cool.
then try to make it out once a year. You know.
Sweet. Oh, nice. That's
so it,
good.
It. Yeah, you know. But.
Do you enjoy it when you go back?
Yeah, I think what's interesting. I definitely appreciate this city more now that I'm not there.
I know, because it can feel a little bit, it can feel like you're trapped there when you're there, and you want to be doing other things. It can feel, like we said earlier, it can feel a little bit isolating. It can feel like, I think the thing about it, to me, it's so comfortable that it's a little bit too comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, you never want to leave.
Yeah.
And to me, that's scary a little bit. So that's why I'm coming to a place where I know I can't be there anymore. Like, I've got to... But it's a place where you want to end up.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much... You're not going to be able to... I don't know. You're probably not going to be able to... hustle there and, like, make it happen from there. But it's a nice place to think about going back to, maybe raise a family or something, having a nice house and open.
You know, you talked about comfort, and I know for me, sometimes as an artist, there's a certain creative fulfillment, anyway, of being slightly uncomfortable.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely.
You know, I think just whether it's you're making the audience feel that or whether it's you yourself, I think it brings about more honest work.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Or like even like compels you to need to make more art or write more songs in my case. Yeah, that's so true. And I think the songs that are important to people are the songs that talk about, you know, or help us when we're suffering in any kind of way. So the songs that come from that place are the songs that mean more to people. It's a little bit disappointing when your favorite artist puts out a new album and it's like really happy. It's kind of like, oh, it's like, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
But it's not doing the same thing for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just not the same. Me personally, I just don't connect to those songs in the same way as when it's like the ones you turn to when you, cause I don't know about you. When I'm sad, I don't listen to a happy song.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on my mood, but oftentimes when I'm sad, I'll either listen to, like, you know, ballads,
yeah,
you know, like Adele,
totally,
or I'll listen to, like, Green Day or the Ramones or something.
Right, which is there's a lot of, like, angst in there, right?
Yeah.
Like, energy.
It's just like, ah!
Totally, which is what that music's for. But if I'm really sad, listening to happy songs isn't going to make me happy.
No.
It's probably going to make me feel more bitter about why, like, this person's singing and is all happy, like, screw them. Like, I'm, you know, it's probably made me realize how sad I am.
Yeah. Fair. That's fair. Well, the album is not out yet because,
no.
But
we'll be soon. We'll
in
be
future, soon. It, but it will still be Better Broken or are we?
We'll see, man. I don't, it's honestly up in the air. All we know for sure is going to be awesome. Okay. All
right.
That's what I promise you. But yeah, if anyone wants to find out when it's coming out, just hit me up on social media. I'll let you know.
Your earlier EP, Then We Fall.
Yeah.
And your new single is Way Up, which you can stream now. And there's also the official video for that.
Yeah, totally.
As
well. Check it all out. Thanks for having me, man.
Vincent, thanks so much, man.
Totally. Thank you.
The Victoria Podcast.
Yeah.
That was my conversation with singer, songwriter, Fintan. Check out his new single, Way Up. You can also find the official video for that on YouTube. And stay tuned for his upcoming album to be released at a later date. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time. Bye for now.
I just like to have a lot of sex.